is Dr. Kim, licensed clinical psychologist and host of Love to Heal. Today, we have a remarkable guest. He is a doctor of dental surgery, an influencer, a bodybuilder, and a former athlete. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Paul Guy.
Oh, man, that sounds so real, Paul. Doctor.
Yes, congratulations on becoming a doctor. I know you became a doctor over your birthday weekend. Is that correct?
That is correct. I received my diploma yesterday on my birthday. So you are the first official person to call me doctor. I appreciate that.
So that is so exciting.
Happy
well
to be here.
Earned.
Thank you. It's been
incredible.
A long road.
Has it really? So I wanted to see what has been your journey to getting to becoming a doctor of dental surgery? What were the setbacks, kind of cool things that have happened along the way?
And what hasn't happened is probably the better term. You know, it's been, like I said, it's been a long road. It kind of started out when I was like 6 years old. I knew immediately I wanted to be a dentist. Really weird thing for a 6 year old to be like, I want to be a dentist, Mom. It's at 6 years old, I knew I wanted to be a dentist, and I also wanted to play professional baseball, and I wanted to do it all. Of course, what kid doesn't want? But growing up, kind of grew up in poverty, so kind of had to make my own way. You know, we'd have to choose between keeping the lights on or having a hot shower, you know, or food on the table. My parents and I all kind of made the necessary sacrifices to kind of get to where I needed to. And that was college, obviously, was the first step. And not everybody, actually, I'm the first person in my family to go to college, graduate college. It was kind of a no-brainer for me, but my family was kind of more of a, wow, are you sure you want to do this? So I kind of start out by in high school, like I said, I wanted to play professional athletics, but, people always told me I wasn't that good, or I wasn't going to play even at college, let alone professionally. And, I said to heck with that. I'm going to do it because I want to. And, you know, it took a few tries. My freshman year of college, I played at OSU Lima. So it's a branch campus. I didn't get to main campus my first year, but, kind of hung back and played there on their club team, did pretty well. And even that coach told me I didn't have a chance in the world, as I'll put it, that I would play for the varsity team. And I wanted to, so of course I'd try out, and I didn't make the team. So I actually played club ball there as well. And I met a friend through intramural softball after our season was over. And she said, hey, you know, you should get a job at the grounds crew, because then you would get access to the field if you really wanted to play. I said, yeah, I mean, why not get access to the field, batting cages, all that stuff. So I was basically the Ohio State baseball version of the movie Rudy. So I was able to play or work on the grounds crew, get access to the field after hours, spend 2, 3, 4 hours a night in the cages or on the mound or just on the field after all of the players had gone home. And then I walked on again and actually didn't make it that second time, but I stayed after and I talked to the coach and I said, hey, you know, I'm going to try out again next year. So, you know, I hope you're okay with seeing my mug again. Yes. And he calls me a week later and says, you know, I did some thinking and I'd like you to try out again for us. I'd like to take some more looks at you. I'm like, all right, so when's practice? So I actually ditched organic chemistry and tried out, and I ended up making the team and playing for 3 years. And it was just crazy. It's just like, I didn't think that it would happen. As a walk-on, you're kind of nobody because you weren't recruited. You don't really have any numbers going into it. So I had to grind it out every single day because my spot wasn't guaranteed. So I knew I wanted it and I wanted to keep it. So I had to maintain it. So, like I said, I ended up playing for 3 seasons and I applied to dental school. Nice. And actually professional baseball was the backup plan. Okay. I didn't get into dental school the first time around. And I'd finished college and I'm like, well, I wanted to play professionally. So here's my shot. I don't have any other plans. So let's go all in. And I drove to 20, 30 different cities trying out for different professional teams, MLB affiliate, independent professional. And I ended up playing or signing a contract and playing for four different teams over three seasons professionally. And that was kind of the culmination of my professional career. When you dive in a little bit deeper in the professional career, it's not what they all make it out to be. It's not all, you know, bright lights and marquee signs and champagne dinners and all this other stuff. When you're in minor league ball, they're not paying you squat. So most of us were still living below the poverty line, single A, double A, and low A rookie ball. We're making maybe 500 every 2 weeks. And when I played indie ball, it was $500 a month after taxes. It's crazy. So, you know, they sell you that dream super cheap. So you got to make sacrifices. I ended up going way in debt just by playing professional baseball, which not many people think about. But I was in a car accident in 2014. That was just really bad timing. And I was actually on my way to throw for an Angels scout, and I still made it. So it was January 4th. It was negative 21 degrees. And on an exit route, an exit ramp, I hit a patch of black ice, spun around, smashed into the concrete wall. And I mean, I felt like I was fine, but my car was not. So I was running late for the tryout. So I just grabbed my bag and walked the last three quarter mile to the field, negative 21. My heart was pumping. My adrenaline was, you know, racing, and I threw for the scout still, but everything was off. I couldn't throw a strike to save my life. And he said, you know, I was going to take a chance on you anyway. You didn't show me anything I can work with. And I said, even though I was just in a car accident and still made it, he's like, I'm sorry, kid, you're 23. You're too old. So that was my sign to hang it up and, you know, move on to the next chapter, which was dental school again. But I didn't get in the first time because I wasn't a strong applicant. My science GPA was a 2.8. Didn't really have anything other than pre-dental club and athletics. And I thought athletics would catapult me into the front of the line, but that it did not. So I ended up getting a master's in public health and did really well there, and got in the second time around. And I actually got into two places, USC and Ohio State, and I chose OSU because Ohio, I've been here forever, so might as well, you know, nice. Finish out.
Yeah.
And yesterday I got my diploma, and it's been a journey.
That's so major. I can't even imagine how surreal it feels right now. Even though you've done so much work to get there, just to have it is like, do you feel like you're floating, or do you feel in shock, or is it not kicked in yet, or how are you feeling?
It's really shock. It's terror. It's excitement. It's everything. It's every emotion. And all at once, because
what is the terror about? That's really interesting. What is the fear? What is the anxiety about?
So, and I'm sure you know this, when you get into the profession of helping people, when mm-hmm. when you get that, like that title, that really means that you're an expert in your field, or you have that knowledge to do certain things for people. That expectation of, one, people of your ability, and two, you of yourself. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get into healthcare, to dentistry for the money. I grew up with nothing. So just having, you know, just being comfortable is incredible. So the money doesn't mean really anything. What matters more to me is to be able to have somebody come to me with needs and for me to satisfy them, especially when teeth and the dentition, the oral cavity is the gateway to the body. And it's also the gateway to the soul. And you may think, like, how is he making that? But when somebody is self-conscious of their smile, they kind of go inward. They're not as outward. They're not as confident. Yep. And that can have serious implications on their entire life, in profession, personal life, and everything. So it's truly the gateway to the body and the gateway to the soul. And to have somebody look at you for something that you did and them just go, wow, thank you so much. I've been self-conscious about this for years. Mm-hmm. It's just like, this is amazing. It's an amazing feeling, but that's also a big responsibility.
Right.
And it's terrifying because you have the power to positively improve people's lives. And it's scary because you want to do as much as you can, but it's a big responsibility.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that obviously with years, it just becomes like natural. You've almost become like, it's hard to not become overly confident, I think, in that piece, but to always really be attuned to what they want. That's really the marker of a good doctor, I imagine, that you would agree. But I definitely see like people that have not only just been raised lower socioeconomic status wise, they weren't able to get braces, or maybe they struggled with substance use like stimulant narcotics, methamphetamine, cocaine. And I see them on a regular basis come in when I'm doing psych evaluations, and there's a lack of eye contact, even when they're sober. A lot of that has to do with the teeth issue. So you in that situation, it's like a psychologist's dream to be able to have that kind of service like in that moment. And sometimes, people have to be pointed in the direction of it or feel like they're worthy of it, and be coached on that before they even come to you. But then once you do it, it's like, what a remarkable visual, tangible change. And you really get to see that, which is so, I would think that on some level, that's almost instantaneous, which we don't get to see a lot of times as psychologists, and so tangible. So how much fun that must be. But you're right, such a big responsibility. So I could definitely understand the anxiety and the fear of that, of course.
Yes, but again, the excitement is obviously overtaking the terror.
Good. You deserve it. That's really amazing. Yes. That is incredible. And so obviously grit, perseverance, discipline, all that had to come into play. And feeling like you need to push through even when you're not intrinsically motivated at some points. And as someone who is well-versed in bodybuilding like yourself, were there some things about bodybuilding that helped you get through the program? Or what do you think it is about kind of mental toughness that helps you in bodybuilding and doing your, and going for your academics and being successful and pushing through? Because that's some serious grind that you had to go through to get to where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a definite crossover between the sport of bodybuilding, powerlifting, or any kind of more, I guess, extreme sport. Because it's there, you can only have so much external motivation. Your peers can only motivate you so far. You have to not necessarily always have that internal motivation, but at least that internal goal and internal drive to continuously kind of push forward. Because at the end of the day, you are your only competition. Mm-hmm. Because you cannot control what everybody else is doing. You can control your attitude and your effort. So right. Those two things truly, when they're in check, can keep you pushing forward, even when you don't want to. When you're in bodybuilding and your caloric deficit is so high, you're working on 1800 calories and you just got through your second, workout of the day. You need that internal drive to be like, okay, I need to make sure I stay on my diet because this is my goal. This is what I want my body to look like. Or powerlifting, making sure you don't go for a PR attempt, even though you feel really good, because you got to stick to the program because you want to get this weight on this day. So it takes some more discipline than you initially think of yourself. It takes more discipline than you think that you have, but by doing it daily and being consistent, you kind of develop that over time. And that will directly transfer to the dental or the doctorate or the academic side of things, because nobody wants to memorize every tendon and muscle in the hand when I'm going to be working in the mouth. But I'm also going to have title of doctor, and I want other doctors to recognize that dentists are doctors. Yes. Yes. But it doesn't matter what your perceived, you know, it doesn't matter what you perceive as what is going to be your job, because the whole thing, the whole experience is that final product. Those endless nights of studying hard, you know, knowing your drug interactions, knowing, you know, the difference between the materials that you use in the mouth is the same as your calories and fats and carbs that you put in your body, you know, and they go hand in hand too, because when you're fit and you're happy, you're releasing endorphins, you sleep better, you recover better, and you retain information better. So they kind of go hand in hand. And to me now, looking back, it's kind of a no-brainer, but there's still a lot of people that don't realize that, you know, working out and eating right and sleeping and recovering, drinking plenty of water, directly relate to your ability to achieve in the classroom, in your profession. Right. So it's...
That is key. I'm so glad you said that, because you're really performing, whether it's physiological or psychological in nature, you're really, truly performing. And definitely that translates really well to academics. And I've seen people that have been in the fitness world doing really well in academics when they're applying that way, with the sleep, with the nutrition, with the discipline. But let me ask you, because I really want to talk more about your setbacks, because they were fascinating, but the psychology of like getting up early in the morning and persisting, do you end up like chunking down your goals? Like, do you look at the semester of what you needed to accomplish, and then you look at the day? Or what are you looking at to keep yourself invigorated? Because I imagine sometimes for a lot of people, just knowing there's going to be a doctorate at the end of 8 years or 9 or 10, whatever it is, may not be enough, because they need it on that daily or weekly or maybe a quarterly basis. So how did you do the chunking as far as that goes to keep yourself lifted?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. 1,000%. That you're absolutely right. The doctorate at the end of your tenure at whatever university or at the end of your program is never enough to keep you motivated. The way I stay motivated was to not necessarily set goals, but the goals were kind of set for me. So whenever something was given to me to complete, I did it right then. I didn't wait till tomorrow. I didn't wait till next week. I didn't wait till the day before it was due. I made sure that as soon as I got what I needed to get done, I got it done as soon as I possibly could. Yep. And mm-hmm. Yes. And because when you get what you're supposed to get done and you're not rushed, you can pay attention to the details. You can retain what you're learning better because you're getting it done, because that's your goal right now. Once you finish it, then that little, you know, accomplishment achieved, you know, Xbox achievement bar goes across your screen. Okay, that is done. Yeah. That is off my plate. I can worry about the next goal, the next assignment.
Yeah, that is exactly how I operate. That's actually, it's so funny. You know, I was thinking about, like, this is a couple of months ago, why I like to return email right away, even though I know psychologically people will think of you as higher value. I don't do that. I just go by what works for me. And what works for me is getting an email responded to so that I don't look like a jerk, so that I'm being professional. You know, if someone needs consultation or something like that, I don't want to leave that, because what if I forget about it? And also I don't want that over my head. So that's so key. What you're saying, that's something you need to get done in that moment if you can, especially if you chunk it down. If it's too overwhelming, you just chunk that into a piece that you at least can get today. That is really, really remarkable advice. That's exactly how I operated through my program. And I'm really glad that you brought that up. Leaving it till tomorrow, that can work for things that you are really averse to, but it's something that you're not, that you actually don't mind. Maybe it's a bit palatable to actually do it in that moment, in that day, or in that week. I think that is that's definitely a marker of people that achieve a lot in life. And when we talk about achievement, a lot of times we're talking about going for a contentment because there's a lot of meaning and purpose behind what you do. What are you extracting? Like what are some moments that you've already taken that give you meaning and purpose from what you're doing now as a doctor of dental surgery?
So extracting besides tea. Got to get those dental dad jokes in. Just real quick, just to kind of, when you said like putting it off to tomorrow because it's, you may be adverse to it. I think that if you do it like even immediately because you don't like doing it because it's done, you'll feel even better about doing it right away. So completely. That was just kind of my
completely agreed. Now, is that palatable for all people? Not necessarily.
Correct.
Of course, so they're so dead set on procrastinating to last minute. Cool. But if you can break that down, like you said, like if you hate it, at least chunk it to one thing today, because when people are writing a book, the majority of people are chunking it. Like they're doing something every day. That way it doesn't feel so overwhelming. So I totally agree if you're averse to it, that you should get that done too. And then what do you do? Do you make sure that you reward yourself at night and during the week? What is your reward schedule looking like?
So that's actually a really good question. I hadn't really thought about it. But I think that what a lot of people, especially in today's age where everything is like immediate, like I need to have it now. Mm-hmm. I think that my reward of now having stress-free time of just whatever I want to do without that looming thing over my head, that time, because time is a finite source. You don't get time back. You can win the lottery tomorrow and get unlimited money, but you don't get more time to spend it. So I think it sounds so nerdy and lame, but I think having the time to not have to worry about what I need to do looming over my head is my reward, because now I can go out and do things that I enjoy. I can go lift weights. I can go, walk with the dog and the missus or have dinner with friends. Stuff I don't have to worry about. So I'm not sitting there with them, not in the moment, because I'm thinking about something else.
That is so, so good. That is exactly what it is that even if we're doing nothing, that is self-care. So if you're getting it done early in the morning, or you're getting it done that week, now the next week or the weekend is actually yours. And a lot of times people are not mindful. They're not in the moment. So now that is not a satiating experience to be with your wife and walk when you're thinking about perseverating on so many things that are over your head. And that is just not adaptive for a lot of people. Some people function really well with a lot on their mind, a lot on their plate. But even people with a lot on their plate, like successful CEOs, for instance, they'll knock things out, like you said, as soon as they can. So if they're getting up early, they're knocking things out. And maybe they're getting things done that maybe they're not so interested in early, so that they can reward themselves with nothing time or free time, however you want to call it. So that is a critical, critical aspect of success. And again, success is leading us to meaning. So do you feel like you're getting meaning out of your daily routine when you are practicing, when you're in your profession?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when we can get a patient or somebody on the road to getting things done, I know it may not sound like too much like a crossover, but when somebody's been awaiting, replacing their teeth for years, and then they're finally getting able to do that, and they're finally able to finish that treatment, not having that looming, issue of not having teeth over their head, like, oh, I need to get this done, but to finally have that culmination of all the work that you've done, that's just, their worries melt away, then your worries melt away. It's just kind of really, really amazing. But kind of wanted to go back a little bit and see, when I was younger, there was a story that was kind of told to me, and I really love this story because it's so pertinent to, my time in dental school and everything. And I haven't always been good at it, but it this is why I do what I do. Because, okay, let me just tell you the story. There's this older man. He comes home every day from work, and he just takes his hands together, and he looks over at the tree, and he makes a gesture up like he's hanging something up. There's nothing there. His child's always looking out the window every day coming from home from work. He makes this gesture on the tree, and he walks inside, has dinner, has an evening night with the children and the wife, and everything is hunky-dory. And he goes off to the next day. The son's always at the window watching his father take that thing off of the tree. There's nothing on the tree. Okay. Every single day, come home, hangs it on the tree, leaves for work, takes it away. One day the son says, "Dad, what are you doing when you come home from work and you're making this weird gesture on the tree? And then when you leave, you do the same thing, but in reverse." He's like, "Son, I've learned that over the years that if I bring my worry and my anxiety and all that from work into the house, your mom always gets angry with me every time. You would fight, all this other stuff. So I realized that if I just leave my worry, anxiety, and all the stresses of work on the tree outside, and then I come in, the nights are amazing. I love my wife. I love you kids. And I'm no care in the world. And then every morning I take that stress and anxiety with me to work so that I can get stuff done there. I never want to mix that anger and anxiety and stress I have at work home, because the home is sacred." And it kind of resonates with me, because there have been times where I've brought work home and I've brought that stress and anxiety home, because you're doing a lot of studying and it's just that anxiety and that stress is right there. And I've seen and been present, had the presence of mind to realize that I am taking that out, that stress out on those that I care about most. And I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So by doing these work and assignments, all that stuff, as soon as I get them, allowed me to figuratively leave the stress at school and enjoy the time I have with those that I love. So it's just kind of just that story. I'm sorry. I just had to.
That is a beautiful and impactful story. And it's really interesting because I think it's applicable to everyone, because if they're living with the family, they're living with extended family or their partner, or whatever it is, it's so applicable because we're stealing moments away from them. And a lot of times people can feel like it's punitive. Like, are you punishing me? Are you blaming me? And of course you're not, but you're definitely stealing time away. So I love that story. That's such a visual for everybody to be reminded of. And I actually think that's something you have to constantly be reminded of and put into practice, but it is so hard to not vent. And as psychologists, we're actually trained and told not to bring our work home, because of course we can vicariously traumatize people that are around us, depending on what we've been told for the day, obviously keeping anonymity. But so that's why we have to be very careful not to take work home, even the stress as well. So I
can't imagine how you would do it. I'm an empath, so I would be a mess.
But you're really dealing, honestly, you are dealing with some serious parallels, because you can take that same person that's had that life story. Now you're hearing that life story, and that leads to the teeth issue. So you're hearing some heavy material as well. So I love that you got that story in for them to listen to, because I know they can take that and apply that to their relationships and their lives too. That gives them a lot of peace. So you have become an influencer, and I wanted to see, what kind of feedback have you gotten from doing that, from showing your fitness journey? Has there been some inspiring moments? What kind of feedback have you gotten?
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually had the opportunity to meet a lot of people across the United States, especially during COVID, when we're all locked down in our houses, not doing anything, especially dentistry. Everybody's like scurrying around, like, what do we do? Because we're craziness. But the coolest thing that has kind of happened throughout my journey of just having a large presence on social media is the ability to connect with people that are very similar to me, as in going through this dental school process, you know, having that doubt in their own minds of whether they can or can't or should or shouldn't. Especially since now with social media, the haters, air quotes, and, you know, the doubters are so much more prevalent and prominent now than they ever have been, because everybody wants to make their their thoughts and opinions known on social media, whether they were warranted or not. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's even more important now that, you know, people with large following that have gone through what they're going through kind of be a voice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's been difficult, but every time somebody reaches out to me via DM or something like that, I make a point to respond to them in some form or another. And most of the DMs that I get that warrant a response are usually young college students and a couple of high schoolers saying, hey, I want to be a dentist too, or I want to be a doctor too. Mm-hmm. How do you do all this stuff? And oftentimes I'll just say, hey, hit me up on Snap so I can just video like call you, because the typing all this stuff out is just a lot. So I've had probably, I'd say, over 100 conversations with, you know, pre-dental and high school kids and people that are just like in the process of applying, to be like, I don't know if I really want to do this, or I don't think I can do this because A, B, and C said I can't. And it will always end with me saying, I don't care what they say, you know, do you want this? How bad do you want it? And are you willing to put in the time, effort, to achieve it? Because yeah, it's not an easy road, as you know, that, you know, what we do isn't easy, but it is doable if you want it. And it's conversations like that have been more important to me than any kind of sponsorship or collaboration deal with brands, because that's just a side effect. The real purpose of having a platform is, one, sharing your experience, two, sharing with others that it's possible to do what you're doing. It's not an exclusion. It's not an exclusive club. This poor boy from freaking, you know, Podunk, Bell Fountain, Ohio, can be the first person in his family to graduate college, first person to get a master's degree, first person to play professional athletics, first person to become a doctor, all in one go. Then you can too. Like and the fitness aspect of it too. I mean, I've lost in, I think total now, I think is like 60 pounds, maybe 55 pounds total loss. I mean, I've gained a little bit back since COVID, but I'm happy. Mm-hmm. But the more important thing is to show others that no matter your circumstances, if you want it, you can get it. Now there are going to be some hurdles along the way, and everybody has different hurdles. Everybody has different hurdles, but you need to not be afraid to ask for help when you need it. So many people think that they're doing this alone. And if anybody asked me if I did it completely alone, I'd never lie and say, yeah, I did it all on my own. There was a big chunk of it that I did with my blood, sweat, and tears, but I was able to talk to people, ask them questions. How did you do this? Hey, would you look at this paper for me? How does this look? How does this, you know, what do you think about this? I'm not an all-knowing being. I'm not, but don't be afraid to ask for help. And some of those conversations were that, just that, you know?
Yeah. And you're just your presence alone. And it's just an added bonus that you actually get back to people at the rate that you do, but your presence alone is like, you're so affable in that you're approachable, and knowing that you've had these setbacks, there's not a lot of, not every professional that I come across is willing to be transparent about the fact that there are setbacks. Sometimes they want to be, mysterious. They want to feel like they had maybe, they were growing up in an affluent, way, and maybe they weren't, and you're willing to be transparent and say there were setbacks. And guess what? That makes you such an inspiration, as you know, to so many people. And that is really the truth of it. And that's a big part of why I wanted you on today, because you are so willing to be transparent about your stories, your setbacks, and to have such massive success, despite all those roadblocks. It's just, it's a story about grit. It's a story about perseverance. And a lot of athletes are really capable of so much because they really put in that grind, despite negative thinking, despite people telling them that they can't do it. But you're doing it anyway, and you're telling the story, which is an added bonus. So now other people can really be inspired, truly. So I'm so excited that you're around and that people can find you and follow you. And I know you're a busy doctor now, which is so exciting. So I wanted to let to know, how can they find you?
So TikTok, Instagram, pretty much any social media outlet. I'm just Swole DDS, Swole DDS, S-W-O-L-E DDS.
Nice. You're amazing. I could keep talking to you for a while. Thank you so much for coming on today, especially after the weekend of becoming a doctor. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I do appreciate it.